This is Tim Hulbert from the American Veterans Center. The mission of the center is to provide an opportunity for America's servicemen and women of every generation to share their stories of valor. It also seeks to pass on the legacy of our veterans and military personnel to younger generations, teaching them the value of service and sacrifice. As part of this program, we are inviting our interns for this summer to step in and serve as hosts of an episode of Profiles in Valor. This week's host is Katie Dempsey.
Welcome back to Profiles in Valor. This week, we're joined by two-time Bronze Star recipient, Lieutenant Colonel Maria Kelly of the Army National Guard.
I've served in the military for 26 years, and that's been both the active Army, Army Reserves, and most of my career in the Ohio National Guard.
What caused you to want to join?
Well, I joined a while ago, so my motives are going to probably seem a lot different to people that are joining today, but I was the fourth of 11 children, and basically, you know, my decision to join the military was kind of my ticket out of the house and to see the world and to get an education, and I did all those things. Obviously, I'm still here, and I'm here for different reasons, because I love serving my country, and I truly love serving others, especially soldiers and their families.
And was there a specific reason why you switched from the Army to the National Guard?
Well, to be honest, I did not know very much about the National Guard. Really, I didn't know anything when I enlisted out of high school. And if I had, you know, I may have never gone on active duty, but I'm glad that I did. It was certainly, you know, good for me and my family. But when I learned about the Ohio National Guard, I joined, and I have just loved it to this day.
So you deployed to Kuwait in 2003 as plans officer, is that correct?
Yes.
What were your specific jobs at that time?
Well, my responsibilities typically would have been kind of forward-thinking operations, but at that time, mainly my focus was on our activity of the day, and that was getting supplies and equipment from the Kuwaiti port to all points north, and that included northern Iraq and western Iraq. You might remember back in 2003, we didn't have the northern port of entry in Turkey, so which was expected. And so we had to kind of shift and now have a sort of a backlog of things in the south to get to far distances north. So transportation was a huge part of my command's responsibility. And as things really started to get a little bit more hostile in the months of June and July is when we really kicked off with a need or demand to have a lot more force protection. And that included equipment, and it included training. Specifically, we developed and conducted a convoy live fire exercise that all of our transportation companies, I think we had 17 at the time, would participate in.
Could you tell us a little bit more about that training?
Sure. Well, the purpose for the training was to combat an evolving threat. And I'll just refer to it as a threat, not necessarily an enemy, because for truck drivers, during that time, it was everything from, you know, criminal, maybe a common thief who just is trying to take your water or your valuables or your food that are on the back of the truck because they're thirsty and hungry. So, you know, how you respond or escalate to that type of enemy is probably going to be a little bit different, and it's very complicated. It involves a lot of training, and it involved training that we hadn't necessarily conducted up to that point, because, you know, when we prepared to go to war, you prepare for a uniformed enemy, and this particular threat was a little bit more complex than that. And additionally, with logistical convoys, especially, you know, the larger ones that we participated in, because we're talking, you know, mainly tractor trailers and that are taking supplies and heavy equipment forward, you know, the mobility of those trucks is just not that great. You know, they can only respond in certain ways. And so the tactics that a logistical convoy employs are going to be different than, you know, a combat patrol. So just developing those tactics and making do with the equipment that we had at that time, you know, in 2003 and 2004, which was a lot less protective than it is today, those were our challenges. And they were great challenges to grapple with, because the ingenuity of the American soldier just never ceases to amaze me. I mean, they will make do with everything that they can. And and, you know, just to get the job done.
Right. And that's still used in combat today, isn't it?
Absolutely. It surely is. But with the things that I was involved in then and the things that I see our soldiers involved in today with regard to the convoys, the practices are a little bit different, obviously, and the equipment is a lot different, which affects the practices. So, you know, we see the MRAPs out there now, and we see the combat platforms that have a lot more levels of armor protection on them than they did when we had the old, you know, soft-side Humvees that we were basically back then using plywood, sandbags, scraps of metal, you know, anything that we could mount on to the vehicles. So, you know, those were our challenges back in the early days. And in later days, you know, you're right, we still grapple with some of the changing tactics and so forth. There is a great constant, you know, and that is the great leadership in the Army today, you know, at all levels. We just have tremendous initiative being shown by very junior soldiers who have to make, you know, major decisions, life and death decisions on a regular basis. And, you know, when they're trained, they do fabulous at that.
Right. I think everyone would agree with that statement.
Mm-hmm.
And did you receive a Bronze Star for your work on developing that technique?
The training, yes, that was a part of the Bronze Star medal that I received in 2003.
When did you receive your other medal?
It was 2007, and that was after a deployment to northern Iraq.
And what was the situation surrounding that award?
My responsibilities then, I deployed as commander of a forward support battalion headquarters. Actually, I took about maybe a third of my headquarters alone. We are basically an organization designed at that time to support a brigade combat team, but we were deployed to basically provide base operations, which included base defense and base support operations and, you know, the associated force protection on the bases. We did that with two adjoining bases in northern Iraq. And, again, just a very tremendous opportunity to learn and grow, I guess you would say, because it was kind of outside of our scope of what we had been exposed to. We were a brigade-level asset back then, which means, you know, we knew how to support Army and other green uniforms, and now we were being asked to support, you know, many different civilians from various agencies, contractors, subcontractors, non-governmental agencies, anyone that basically lived or operated on our bases. We provided support and protection for those persons.
Was that your biggest challenge, would you say?
I would say it definitely was. Just the complexities of it. It was just wonderful how people work together, you know, when they have a common cause like that. But, you know, I mean, that wasn't necessarily my background in the past, and so it took some real growing for me. Now, you know, I had been exposed to that a little bit. My command had some base responsibilities in 2003 and 2004, so I kind of had an idea of what we were in for, and it made it possible for me to kind of line up a group of soldiers, you know, to fill the ranks when we would deploy that had some of that background. My XO, who also was the mayor of the FOBs, he had a very extensive background, still does, in contracting on the civilian side. So he had those credentials and that experience, and you know, that was just a great asset to have. And, you know, I was able to take with me also soldiers that had, you know, just great experience in base defense operations and combat arms that, you know, just allowed me to have a lot of good assurance and a lot of good skill sets to draw from while we were there, because we were a pretty small team of people for such large responsibilities.
Did you have to use them a lot? Was there a lot of activity on your base?
Well, we were, you know, adjacent to Mosul, the second largest city in Iraq. And so, yes, I would say we were constantly engaging in those defensive activities. You know, our goal was to maintain a very hardened posture, you know, a posture that would deter anyone from, you know, taking the time to think that they could get anywhere with us. But what was in the back of everyone's mind really was, and I just left theater in 2004, just a couple months before the FOB had been penetrated by a suicide bomber who walked into the dining facility and detonated himself during the lunch hour. And, you know, that was on our minds very heavily. It was just a horrible thing, you know, to have happened because there was a lot of progress in that area prior to that. And, you know, when I found out that that base was going to be where we would be and that that would be our responsibility to protect it, I, you know, was very concerned about both the outward defense of the base as well as anything that might penetrate inwardly and hurt soldiers. Our goal was to have a safe environment so that the warfighters could conduct their mission and come back and not have to worry about their safety, but they could recover and be ready for the next mission. So that was a constant process, and to keep from getting comfortable or complacent in those operations, that was always a challenge too.
Right. So what are you up to now? Are you
Well, a couple of days ago, I finished a tour as Rear Detachment Commander for Sustainment Brigade Headquarters. This particular brigade headquarters was heading over to Multinational Division West, and they just returned a few months ago, and I've just handed that back over to the commander. So today I'm actually just having a little bit of a release and a waiting assignment.
And now you're interviewing.
That's right.
Are those your kids in the background?
Yes.
Okay. That leads me to my next question. Well, I imagine it's very difficult balancing being an officer, a wife, and a mother. How do you do that? What would be your words of advice for other female soldiers that hope to accomplish all that you have?
Well, I would say planning is obviously a huge part of any successes that we've had, and it works the other way, too. Lack of planning really will hurt. But, you know, really my advice would be just hang in there because for my husband and I both, you know, over the years there have been points in our lives, and there's always a point when, you know, maybe a child is born or someone gets a new job or whatever, that it becomes overwhelming, and you think to yourself, yeah, it's time for one of us to let this go, or, you know, both of us or whatever. And, you know, in my career, I could probably pinpoint maybe 5 or 6 times when, you know, I've almost put the papers in and gone. And I would just say hang in there because if it weren't for some key leaders, supervisors, colleagues in my life, you know, I probably would be gone for now. But they helped me to see that these are just temporary times in our lives and that there's, you know, great rewards ahead if you just continue to grow and to learn and to contribute.
We've been speaking with 2-time Bronze Star recipient Lieutenant Colonel Maria Kelly of the U.S. Army National Guard.
Profiles in Valor is produced by the American Veterans Center and Radio America. To hear more profiles, subscribe on iTunes or visit www.americanveteranscenter.org.